And it's been a week of news about Britain's vote to exit the European Union. And we've heard a lot about what Brexit may mean for the nation's future. But how does this fit into its history? Robert Saunders is a professor of modern British history at the Queen Mary University of London. Welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Well, as an historian, as you look at Brexit, how surprised were you? How big of a deal is Brexit in the context of British history?
I think it's an absolutely huge deal. Historians love a precedent, and we've spent the last week desperately scrabbling around to try and think of something on this scale before. And the best people can really do is the collapse of the British Empire in terms of its impact on Britain's place in the world. The difference is that that happened over about 30 years and was reasonably well planned. This happened in 24 hours.
But you would say this is as big of a deal in the course of British history as the collapse of the empire?
In terms of what it means for Britain's place in the world and Britain's strategy, you know, this has overturned the entire course of Britain's economic policy, its foreign policy, and its trade policy in one go.
Is it connected, in your view, to the collapse of the empire?
I think it's linked in terms of the big question. If you think back to Britain in the early 20th century, Britain was a global superpower. It had the biggest empire in the world. It was a manufacturing titan. And after 1945, as the empire disappeared, as Britain lost its place as a global superpower, the question was, what did Britain do next? What was the point of Britain? And the answer to that question for every government since 1961 was that Britain must join the European Union and lead in Europe. And so that option has now closed.
How has Europe influenced Britain over the last few decades as it's been a part of the European Union? What is Britain going to lose in terms of European influence?
I think we're only really discovering in the wake of the vote actually how intertwined Britain has become with the EU. It's Britain's biggest trading partner. It's its most important trade relationship, so that has to be rebuilt. But it's also become part of the law of Britain. Over the last 40 years, the British legal system and the European legal system have become intertwined, so we've got to now pick that apart. Things like regional policy, development money, support for the arts and culture and higher education, much of that has come from the EU. So all of that has to be rebuilt now from the bottom up.
And what about the other way around? How do you think British ideals have influenced Europe over the last few decades?
Well, one of the ironies of this is that the British always see themselves as the awkward partners in Europe, whereas on the continent, people often perceive a British agenda that has driven the EU for the last 20 years. And what that's particularly been about is the completion of the single market, making it easier to trade across borders, and particularly making it easier for service industries and financial services to trade across Europe. So there's been a more sort of liberal Europe as a result of British influence.
What brought the UK to be part of the EU in the first place? As you look back, what was the reason that Britain wanted to do this?
Britain came in rather reluctantly. So Britain didn't join at the start. The EU was founded in the 1950s and Britain stayed outside. And that's partly because Britain had such a different experience of the Second World War. Britain was not occupied. Britain was not defeated. It didn't have to engage with the questions of resistance or collaboration. And Britain was still a great power at the end of the war. So Britain originally stood apart. What then changed was that British economic decline by the 1970s had reached catastrophic proportions, to the extent where governments of all parties felt that it was necessary for the British economy to be in. So this was never a great idealistic mission for Britain. It was always about the costs and benefits.
And there was always a healthy skepticism in Britain about the European Union. And in fact, you can go back to Shakespeare, who described Britain's waters as a moat, quote, against the envy of less happy lands. So it's been around for a long time. So do you think that the Brexit makes sense in that context, that Britain is returning to its real true self, or that it doesn't make sense because for Britain's future, it should be part of this?
I think it taps into a recurring myth, but I think it's a myth rather than a reality. You quote Shakespeare talking about this sceptred isle, but he was talking about England, not about Britain. And England is not an island. So there's always been a degree of confusion about this. But I think it's true to say that the British think of themselves as being semi-detached from Europe. We talk about going to Europe on holiday or joining Europe as if that's a choice. And there's always been a sense that, you know, Britain had a destiny that lay across the waves, that was part of the Anglo-Saxon world. It had its special relationship with the United States. It had its Commonwealth and empire. And so because of that, in a way, joining the European community felt quite provincial. It was a shrinking of Britain's ambitions in the world.
How do you think that history is going to remember David Cameron, who was the one who brought us this referendum in the first place?
Well, a year ago, he was the most successful Conservative leader for a quarter of a century. He had been the first since Margaret Thatcher to win a majority. He was the first since 1900 to increase his share of the vote while in office. Whereas I think this is going to mark his reputation forever now. This is the biggest policy failure by a British government probably since the 1930s.
That's Robert Saunders, who teaches modern British history at the Queen Mary University of London. Thank you so much.
Thank you.